From Rockwired Sound in Albuquerque, New Mexico, of all places, this is Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. On today's show, Rockwired presents the hard-edged punk sound of Sprockets, Canadian rockers Social Code, and the haunting electronic sound of White Apple Tree. Stick around for more. Rockwired Radio is a production of Rockwired Media, LLC, a limited liability company. Please stand by. Welcome to another edition of Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and the music is out there. I've got a great show for you this week. I've got an amazing band out of Canada called Social Code, who've just released their amazing new CD, Rock and Roll. I've also got a band from San Diego called White Apple Tree, who've released their curiously titled debut CD, Velvet Mustache. But first, I'm going to shine a light on a Las Vegas-based power trio called Sprockets. I got acquainted with this band toward the end of last year when they released their CD, Medicated Empty, and I was all too happy to have them back for our show. We're going to hear what the band members, Brody Knight Vans and Brave Dave Schwaller, have to say about their latest opus right after I give you all a taste of their sound. Here is Sprockets with the title track of their latest release, Medicated Empty.
Oh,
That was Sprockets with the title track of their latest CD, Medicated Empty. Visit the band at myspace.com/sprocket. A couple of days ago, I got a chance to talk with Brody Knight Vans and Brave Dave Schwaller of Sprockets about their latest CD and coming together as a band. Here's how it went.
Well, you know, the album Medicated Empty is, you know, is quite an album, and now that it's out there for everybody to hear, how do you feel about the finished work?
I think it's a stepping stone for the band, for me as a writer, and for us to kind of develop a newer sound. I think overall the best thing about Medicaid Empty was the result of how people accepted it. And so, and as people have negative things to say, they still, it seems like they're still respectful about it in a lot of ways. And so it's something that we look on, that we can step to a new level and kind of develop something that maybe can combine the people that had something negative to say, or, you know, I think the talent, it shows the talent, and it shows what we're capable of doing, but it hasn't quite reached that developed professional sound yet. So as I look back on it, I think it was a great CD, especially for, you know, our second album. But there is work. You know, vocals have been getting stronger. We know that we've got to work on vocals and bringing other guitars into it and other things. And so, looking back, I wish I had more time and money to put into it. But as far as the product and the music goes, I think it was great. It was a huge moment in my life, and it became something that I'm very proud of, and I look back on it, and it reflects a great time in my life, and I think I executed my feelings and emotion for that time. And I just hope that we're not locked into that one-dimension, you know, kind of depressing, sit-in-your-room sound, you know what I mean? I want to be an artist that kind of comes up with anything and everything. So I think it's a great, great stepping stone for what we're capable of doing.
Talk about the beginnings of the band. How did that begin?
We started in 2006. It was actually late 2005 we were talking about it, and we came up with we wanted to kind of be fun. You were a little younger, so we kind of want to be a fun band that just wanted to rock out, and ended up, you know, coming up with some songs that they weren't recorded well or played well, but we really liked the idea of what was behind the music and what the music was about. And so we took it to that next level in about 2007 and came up with a demo and released Uniform Mascara, which that song kind of opened the door to what our sound is now. And then we've been traveling ever since, playing together, working together. We moved from Boise, Idaho to Las Vegas, so it's been a big move and a complete change in our lifestyles, I guess. So the way our music is coming out is a little different, and you know, you change locations and it becomes part of you, and that's just kind of the way it is. So we're so much different than the beginning. In the beginning, we were so clueless and so just wishing that we were going to be huge rock stars, and you know, nothing in front of us but big stars and clouds that have lights with our names on it. And we're kind of to that point where we realize that being an artist isn't about being big. So I guess from the beginning to now, we've completely changed, and hopefully everything we learned from Boise will you know, make us stronger as friends, and because it sucks going on tour with somebody you don't like. And we've been friends ever since 15 years old, and that's kind of the beginning of it. We just were friends, and me and Dave started playing. We picked up guitar and bass at the same exact time, and Dustin was playing since he's 2 years old, so we already knew about him. He went to our school, and we knew that he was amazing. We knew that he was definitely someone we wanted to work with. We just, at the time, when we were 15, he was amazing. He was like a prodigy, and we were just learning. So we kind of took our steps, and eventually we thought we had a good, you know, a good background in music, and we asked him to be in our band, and he said yes, and that's all she wrote.
talk more about the other two members and what it is you think each of them brings to the table, not just their music, but personality-wise, that makes this work. I mean, like you said, you know, it's quite an undertaking to be on the road with someone for months at a time, and, you know, it would suck to have it be with someone you don't like. So tell me what it is about these two guys that makes it, you know, work.
Well, we all have the same sense of humor. We all have we love Adam Sandler movie kind of humor. You know, the comedies, we all like the same kind of movies. We all like those kind of, whatever. We just like the same things. So that's easy. How we all kind of react with each other is differently, though. Me and Dave, we have a lot of the goofy. We make ourselves giggle over nothing, and it's ridiculous. And sometimes people think we're on drugs. Because we've been friends for so long, the littlest thing will make each other laugh, and it's always a big competition. It's always, you know, how can I make you laugh harder than you made me laugh last time? And so that reflects on our shows, video blogs and everything like that. We'll do blogs over and over again just because we know that each time we're gonna one up it and make it better. And so. As far as like our relationship, me and Dave, we're pretty close. We've been through everything I can think of together. I know me and Dustin, we like a lot of the outside. Like me and Dave, we like the heavy music. We kind of like the stupid comedies, the Flight of the Conchords kind of stuff. And then somehow I became the bridge to Dustin. Hates like the Flight of the Conchords kind of stuff, but he likes, you know, hip hop, and he likes rap, and so as far as what they bring to the table is like this, just grabbing music from all different areas and just colliding into the middle, and our personalities kind of enhance it, I guess. On stage, me and Dave talk a lot to each other. We talk a lot to the crowd. We try to involve as many people as we can, so everyone kind of has a moment they created. And Dustin brings an amazing show all on his own. Like when we play live, no one's ever looking at me or Dave. Everyone's looking at Dustin the whole time. He's absolutely phenomenal. He's doing great in his other band, 5150. They just got picked up for UFC, and so he's been doing great doing that stuff. And that's opened up a ton of doors for Sprockets. And so he brings kind of like that I know people love me attitude to the crowd. Dave brings the technical terms. He knows all the notes. Like, I don't know a single note. Like, I've been learning lately, but I don't know chords. I don't know how to read it, music. I just play. And if I like it, then I go with it. And he brings all the technical. You need this chord for this blah, and you need, you know, this extension, and this note goes with this. And he knows everything when it comes to just developing things. And then I usually am the vision. And so it works out really well. We never step on each other's toes. We don't try to, you know, take over someone else's glory. So no jealousy. And that, I think that's what kills most bands when they go on tour. They, you know, someone starts getting more attention in one direction, and then two people start fighting, and then it becomes everyone's involved and everyone's awkward, and then you're stuck in the car for days on end in this awkward moment, and both stubborn, and they just, you know, never really resolve the problem, and it just gets worse. And I don't think we have that. If we had that, we would have definitely shown it by now. So I don't know. I think as far as our what they bring is so different from each other that it's easy to accept them and appreciate them both. And so as an audience member, as a person watching Sprockets, you can love each individual member without really feeling like, oh, I like this person more, I like this person more. It's you love us for different things, different attitudes. And I think it's the hardest thing to find as a person, finding people that want to play music and want to tour and want to do this as a goal, as a lifetime, like career, that don't collide emotionally or mentally. So I think that's the best part about them, to tell you the truth. I mean, musically, they're amazing. We're a three-piece, and I'll be the first one to say that we try to sound like a five- or six-piece band, whether it's live or on CD, and we only have three pieces, and so everyone has to be very good at what they do. So needless to say, we're we're all adequate and we're all capable of playing our instruments and singing, and you know, but as far as personality goes, I couldn't ever replace them. If I did, I'd be heartbroken.
Yeah, you guys really sound like a band of brothers.
A band of brothers, yeah, that's exactly right.
What songs off of Medicated Empty resonate for you the most personally, and why?
Well, Medicated Empty is a big one. I think it's one of the closest, because I was coming off of a surgery and my dad just died, and I was realizing that the pills that I was taking for my surgery was completely warping my sense of reality and making it hard for me to really focus on anything. And so I came up with this song, Medicated Empty, about that numb feeling and all the pain that's going on around me I'm not dealing with. I can't really even feel. And so I just kind of came up with the song, Medicated Empty, and it turned into a kind of a selfish motive into, there's people out there that are really hurting, that are really devastated, and they are feeling their pain, and no one's really paying attention to them, because no one really pays attention to that kind of attitude until they drastically, you know, commit suicide or do something drastic, and then all of a sudden everyone's, oh, I wish I could help them, or, you know. And so it turned into that concept, which I loved, and I thought it was kind of like a more, it could help people song. And so that's a very close one. Safety Nets and Fasten Windows was directly about my dad dying. I wrote it. It was the only song I've ever written in one sitting, and I know exactly the time, the day. It was Christmas Eve. It was like around 10 o'clock. Like, I wrote it all night, and it was his birthday and his first Christmas with Adam. So I wrote this song called Safety Nets and Fasten Windows, based on the principle, everyone has a safety net to fall into, but you might have to fall through some windows to get there. And turned into what it is, and definitely one of my favorites, and it's been doing great. It's like most downloaded song in Vegas for 150 days or something around that area. So it's doing great, and I think the message is kind of getting out finally. It's been a little while. We've released the album March 13th of 09. And I feel like the message is finally starting to get out.
What would you like someone to come away with after they've heard this album?
I say this over and over again. I want to create a moment that influences you and inspires you to do something different. Whether it's something that's going to drastically change your life, or it's going to be something that maybe just changes your opinion, so you broaden your horizons. But I want people to listen to Sprockets, feel something, whether it's what I feel or what I wrote it for, or whether it's some crazy attachment that you associate it with, and almost learn from it. And I don't know what my messages are all the time, and I can tell you that I've learned from my songs in different ways, that I've written a song one way, and I knew why I wrote it. I listened to it in a devastating moment. It just came off for whatever reason, and I've completely changed my opinion on some songs. And that's what I love about our music. It's kind of sporadic. Everything's very visual, and how I write lyrics, it's kind of, it's hard to know exactly what I talk about all the time. And I kind of do that because I want people to have their own say in it. They might hear one or two words that completely changes the song to them. And so I want that. I want to inspire people, and I want people to understand that it isn't about what the song is about, it's about how the song affects you. And that's how we write all songs, so.
Visit Sprockets at myspace.com/sprocket. From their CD, Medicated Empty, here are Sprockets once again with Safety Nets and Fastened Windows.
Since joining the band up until now, what has been the biggest surprise for you? What has happened that you didn't expect?
First of all, moving to Las Vegas. Of all places in the world, I don't think I ever really thought I'd be in Vegas. But it's turned out to be a lot better than I expected. Really well for us. I mean, I expected the band to do well and everything, but just personally, liking the city myself, you know, I didn't think this was going to be a place that I could fit in and do well, but, you know, I'm really enjoying it here, and it's been good. Aside from that, I guess just kind of the way our music's evolved is just, I don't know if it's so much of a surprise to me, but it's something that I really, really enjoy just seeing. You know, you listen to the earlier recordings and just how it's come along and how our sound has changed and just everything that we do. It's not so much a surprise, but it's just something that, you know, I notice is definitely a change there. I really enjoy checking that out.
Tell me a little more about the band's early sound. I mean, yeah, all I've got to go on is Medicated Empty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so tell me how you think the sound has changed.
Well, in the very, very early years, when Brody and I were just 15, we were just picking us up starting, we listened to a lot of, like, Blink 182 and other, you know, punk rock bands like that. I listened to Korn a lot back then, but we didn't reflect on our sound much. It was close to that kind of alternative punk, Blink 182 and MXPX, Green Day, and Offspring definitely. And as we went on, we tried to mix in something a little heavier, and it got violent. That's what Brody just said. It got violent, you know, and that's kind of true. It wasn't like death metal or anything, but it was fun to play, that's for sure, but some of it was just kind of a little chaotic and a little different. A lot of experimenting, very unorganized, we didn't really have a specific sound. We would have a soft song, we'd have a song that was punk, we'd have a song that was heavy, we'd have a song that was just weird.
And everything,
there was definitely a lot of sexual innuendos tucked away in there as well. Everywhere. But so from that, it's just gotten a lot more organized, I guess is the best way to put it.
I see.
And I believe our first album, Sympathetic Addictions, is available on iTunes. But there's so many things. We listened to it just the other day. We're going back and we're kind of redoing some things on acoustic, just for like acoustic shows we're doing, and just revisiting some old songs and just kind of redoing them. And this is stuff that's really, really good. We didn't know how to put it all together right, I guess is the best way to put it.
What brought on the move to Vegas? I mean, some bands move to L.A., some, you know, go to New York. Why Vegas?
Well, first thing is, I didn't really want to live in L.A., but Vegas it's a pretty good location as far as, I mean, we're 4 hours from L.A., we're 4 hours from pretty much anywhere in California right there.
Yeah.
You know, in the L.A. area, where we can live in Vegas, live in a house, you know, afford that. Have that, you know, higher, you know, nice living style there. And still be close to L.A., you know, we're close to Phoenix, and it's close, kind of a central location. So we're not just stuck, you know, right there on the coast. We can kind of move all around us.
I see.
And have, you know, places to play. And as far as Vegas, you know, it's a big city. It's definitely a lot more in the entertainment business than Boise, Idaho is. And everybody comes to Vegas. You know, even if you don't go somewhere, everyone comes to Vegas. So there's always new people that can see your music, can see you, and, you know, bands are always coming in that you can play with, and it's just great.
But is there, like, a set scene there at all, or is it all just, you know, whatever comes through?
It's a little of everything. As far as
who comes to town, I mean, everybody. You know, it's just all the major bands, bands that have disappeared for years and years, all of a sudden will come back in Vegas and do a show. And with local music, you get a pretty big, I mean, there's definitely a lot of metal bands, and there's a lot of bands that are kind of doing the Killers kind of sound.
Oh yeah, they're from there, aren't they?
Yeah, the Killers are.
Yeah, I forgot all about that. Don't know why that escaped me, but okay.
Definitely a Killers influence.
What do you think is next musically for this band? Where do you see it going with your next release or whatever?
I think the very next project we might do might be an acoustic. I mean, we're still definitely not going away from the electric, but I think that's just the next step is what we're... A lot of what we've been doing right now is we've been doing a lot of writing on our acoustic guitars. We've been doing a lot more acoustic shows, just kind of picking up different... We get different demographics, different fans, you know, from different places this way, and I think with the new music we've been doing and bringing, like I was saying earlier, those old songs on, like our first album, Sympathetic Addictions, and redoing those, maybe re-recording those as acoustic, just to kind of bring some new things back, and you know, really just pushing that as long as, because we can do that all the time with Dustin doing the 5150. We still get all our shows we need, but this way we can get a few extra in there, and develop our sound a little better and a little differently, and it's a lot better for us. It makes us work on our vocals a lot more. You know, when you get the drums in there and you get all the distortion on the guitar, there's a lot that's covering up your voice there, so it's not all crisp and clear. But when it's just two guys with an acoustic guitar, acoustic bass, you know, it's just bare bones. You got to be on it.
Visit Sprockets at myspace.com/sprocket. From their CD Medicated Empty, here are Sprockets once again with Uniformed Mascara. listening to Rockwired Radio exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and we'll be back with Canadian Rockers Social Code after these teeny tiny little messages. This is Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. Musical aptitude since 2005. Welcome back to Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and we just got done profiling the Las Vegas-based punk band Sprockets and their remarkable latest CD, Medicated Empty. Now we're on to the second segment of our show, and we're shining a light on a band based out of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. They are called Social Code, and they have just released their latest CD, Rock and Roll. I got a chance to speak with the band's leader, Travis Nesbitt, about the making of the CD and life on the road in general, but we'll get to all that later. From the CD Rock and Roll, here is Social Code with Satisfied.
You're about. I don't need your name or number, just wanna get in and get out. She's a loaded gun with her sights on me. There's no mystery. She's a jazz band. It's plain to see, she'll go easily.
from their CD Rock and Roll. That was Social Code with Satisfied. Visit the band at their official website, www.socialcodemusic.com. I got a chance to get acquainted with the band's lead singer, Travis Nesbitt. Here's a little taste of how the interview went.
Well, talk about your response to the reaction of this first album, you know.
It's been pretty damn good. I mean, you know, we definitely took a different, a bit of a course correction, I suppose, with the musical stylings of this record in comparison to the last. But, yeah, man, people have been reacting to it well, and you know, the shows have been going off awesome. You know, all in all, I think that we're just happy with where the band's at, and musically, and just kind of, we're just going to keep moving forward, you know?
I see. And what specifically do you think is different this time around?
Well, you know, it really comes down to you know, more of a focus on I guess who we are as a band and songwriters. You know, it came down to you know, just us saying, well, look, we're a rock band. Let's just keep it simple and write a rock record. You know, and we kind of went back to the roots of kind of why we got into music in the first place, and great songwriters that helped kind of shape rock and roll. And I guess we just kind of wanted to, you know, I guess focus more on who we were and who we are. Just kind of become more of an identity, you know?
And how does songwriting happen within the band?
Well, I mean, it happens a variety of ways. There's, you know, any way that you could imagine it kind of does. I mean, a lot of cases, you know, we'll all sit together in a room and just start, you know, kind of messing around on an acoustic guitar. And come up with something that way, or you know, two guys will run off and just work in the studio or whatever. I mean, you know, on this record, there's a lot more that I actually sat with my guitar and just came up with little snippets and nuggets to kind of bring into the band. And Morgan did a lot of that too. So you know, it really just came down to just getting the songs, you know, out however they did. You know, so there's not really a formula for us. It's just a matter of getting it done.
And how did music begin for you as an individual?
It's kind of an interesting little story. All through my life, I never really saw myself as a musician. I was always, I've been painting and drawing my entire life. And I was, you know, back in school, obviously, I was doing acting and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, Logan and a bunch of friends just started a band. And they needed a singer, and I was the only one that was willing to do it. So it just kind of fell into my lap that way. But you know, as soon as I got kind of the knack for it, everything else became you know, number two in my life, and music became number one. So it's kind of always been that way.
And how did this band begin? Talk about the genesis of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we Logan and I have been playing together for years and years and years. I mean, it's been a long time. And we ended up, you know, with, I guess, another guitar player at the time. We were under a different name called Fifth Season. And signed a record deal and did a big name search and figured out that we couldn't keep the name. So some other band had it. So, you know, we kind of made Social Code at that time. We were in Los Angeles at the time, And it was kind of a beginning, you know. Even though we had been a band for a couple of years, it was kind of a new beginning at that point, where we're kind of taking things seriously and, you know, really wanting to take things to the next level. So it was about 2002, mid 2002, when the Social Code actually began. We started kind of working under that name. So yeah, man, it's been a little while.
Talk about the other members of the band and what it is you think each of them brings to the table, not just musically, but personality-wise, that makes it work.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, you know, we've been through a lot of members, and it's tough to get everybody working on the same page. And you know, in the studio, that's one thing, but even, you know, on a personality level, it's really tough because you're living in a bus or a van with these guys for months on end, and you know, so you know, we really became friends pretty tight over the years with this lineup. But you know, Logan's a guy that kind of does our day-to-day, you know,
real kind of detail guy. He's kind of the dollars and cents kind of organization guy, but you know, brings a lot of creativity as well. You know, the guy can really pick up a guitar and have some great ideas and sitting in the studio, he's just a really big asset there. And same thing with Morgan. I mean, that guy has he'll tell you he's got perfect pitch, but that's just him saying it. But you know, he's probably the most open person I've ever worked with, just in anything. You know, he's always up for something new and a new challenge and a new song direction. You know, he's not really too attached to one thing or the other. And then Benny, what can I say about him? He is our musical guy. You know, there's beyond that. I mean, that guy just lives and breathes drums. So, you know, he's kind of our music aficionado there. He's a guy that went to college and actually took music. So that's just kind of running through his veins. I guess we just kind of meet in the middle and make pretty good music. So we're happy.
And what songs off of the album resonate for you the most personally, and why?
Personally, I'd say the first song on the record is called Rock and Roll, the title track. It's kind of the song that kind of showed me that, that you should have an opinion about something, and you should be strong-minded about something, and it shouldn't just be about fluff and about some kind of a relationship-y thing. You know, that's cool if that's what the song is and if it's real, but, you know, rock and roll kind of unlocks something, and it was kind of like, I found that I was kind of pissed off about something and kind of annoyed with the music that's been on the radio, and I don't know, I just, you know, nothing really struck a chord with me that I was listening to one day when I was driving home from rehearsal, and I just went home and wrote a song about it, and actually, you know, it was pretty cool. It was one of those ones that just kind of flopped out, and it didn't really take a lot of effort to get the idea out, and then once I brought it to the studio and everybody was there, you know, everybody kind of really really liked it a lot and threw all their ideas in as well, so it was pretty cool. That it feels emotional, which is something that I didn't think that you could really get emotion out of. You know, I thought that emotion came from some sort of a relationship or singing about love or whatever, but it's just something that, you know, it's not really about that. It's probably, for me, it's the most emotional song on the record.
Visit Social Code at their official website, www.socialcodemusic.com. Here is the band once again with the title track of their latest CD, Rock and Roll.
Now is not the time for talking. Give me what I want or I'm walking. I just wanna hear some rock and roll. I like it stripped down raw and naked. A little piece of your heart, I'll take it. Turn it up as loud as it will go. I don't want it packaged neat. It's time to lose control. I'm gonna kill my television and burn my radio. I just want something that'll move my soul. I want rock and roll. I set these city streets on fire, strike a match and start a riot, burn it to the ground with rock and roll. The battle stopped, my ears still ringing. I miss the sound of the siren singing. The tattoo on my heart says rock and roll. I don't want it packaged neat. It's time to lose control. I'm gonna kill my television and burn my gonna kill my television and burn my radio. Honest was something that'll move my soul. I want rock and roll.
Live audiences responded to the band.
Great. Yeah, man. It's all good. We've always had a lot of love from the fans up here in Canada, and you know that's really starting to begin down in the U.S. as well. So, you know, we're just anxious to get out on the road this summer.
Being on the road and touring, I mean, has it ever taken a toll on the band?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, if you've got things going on at home, or you know, there's personality clashes with the guys in the band, I mean, you know, yeah, you have falling out, but, you know, you have enough respect for one another to kind of know why you're out on tour and why you're there and what your job is, and, you know, everybody's there to support you, but, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, everybody's kind of doing their best to kind of keep it going as well. So, you know, there's tours that in our past that have kind of, you know, been less than exciting, and there's tours that have been amazing. So you just kind of have to, you know, wake up every day knowing that regardless of the show, you know, it's about the show. It's about the fans that came out to see you. It's about that relationship. And, you know, if you kind of start thinking about it in any other way, then you're almost doing it for the wrong reasons, you know.
Since the formation of the band up until now, what has been the biggest surprise for you?
Biggest surprise? I don't know. there's been many challenges, that's for sure. But I guess the biggest surprise is just I guess truly how difficult it is really to kind of, you know, even get into the U.S. or something like that, you know, something that we're basically next-door neighbors, and just to get some sort of recognition in a country that's essentially exactly the same as yours. There's no real language barrier. There's no real anything different than other than just, you know, a bunch of human beings just happen to be living on the other side of this imaginary line, you know? It's tough being Canadian and just crossing the border, and I've heard the same thing from American bands trying to get into Canada, you know?
What would you like someone to come away with after they heard Rock and Roll, the album?
I want them to feel like they got their money's worth and that they've heard a fucking amazing kick-ass rock record. It's just simply put, and that's what we're hoping for.
And what do you think is next musically for the band?
You know what? I think that we're going to keep going in this vein. You know, I don't think we're going to change it up for the next record. I mean, this batch of songs, what just happened in our band, you know, musically, is something that was pretty exciting, and it really felt like we're on the right path. So, you know, I think we're just at the beginning of truly exploring where we're going to go musically with who we are as a rock band.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's right, man.
Visit Social Code at their official website, www.socialcodemusic.com. From their CD Rock and Roll, here is Social Code once again with Nothing Left to Lose. You're listening to Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and we'll be back with the band White Apple Tree and their album Velvet Mustache after these teeny tiny little messages. This is Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. Musical aptitude since 2005. Welcome back to Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and we have just begun our final segment. Sure, it may be the last thing on the agenda, but that don't make it any less important. Hailing from San Diego, California, the band White Apple Tree boasts a rock sound that is heavy on electronics on their debut CD, Velvet Mustache. I got a chance to speak with singer and songwriter Ryan Marshall Lawhon about his shift in musical direction from a Christian artist to an edgier rock sound. You'll get a chance to hear that in just a bit. From the CD, Velvet Mustache, here is White Apple Tree with Broken Bones.
For some time, for some time now, for fear of the unknown. You search for answers on your own, like a child on a search for diamonds in the snow. To Paris, go to London, go to Rome. I won't tell anyone about your broken bones. We won't stop until the moment we are forced. I won't tell anyone about your broken bones.
Yeah.
From their CD, Velvet Mustache, that was White Apple Tree with Broken Bones. Visit the band at their official website, www.whiteappletree.com. A couple of days ago, I got a chance to speak with Ryan Marshall Lahan of White Apple Tree over the phone. Here's how it went.
Well, Velvet Mustache is a great CD. I mean, congratulations on getting it out there, you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're happy, and it took forever to get done, so we're happy to have it out there and that everyone can hear it now.
Well, how long did it take exactly?
It took like a year and a quarter to record, just because we were recording at a studio that was my manager had a part ownership in the studio, and so we were kind of taking dates as they came along, dates as we had wanted. So it took longer than we'd like, but with that, we got to really vary up the style of songs as far as most of the songs are very eclectic on the album. Not all sound exactly the same because it recorded over such a long period of time that we got to change up what we saw fit as it went through.
I see. And is White Apple Tree your first ever recording experience, or were you in other bands before this one?
It's actually mine. I was actually a Christian worship artist for about 3 or 4 years.
Really?
I never did any recording, but I was very much in the worship scene in San Diego and even in Orange County a bit, just doing guest worship concerts here and there, but now I've started this to actually get into the local scene and get out of the worship scene a little bit, and this is definitely not a Christian record, and so I've had experience with music, but this is my first recording experience.
I see. And what sort of compelled you away from the more Christian direction?
Nothing compelled me away from it. I think if you want to talk about marketing strategies, it although the Christian music market is a booming market, and they actually still buy CDs, which is something that doesn't necessarily happen in the indie market or the hip-hop market, per se. And so, the music that I listened to, I found out wasn't in there, and I wanted to make music like that, and originally it was Christian-based, and I showed it to a lot of my Christian friends, and they just didn't really have a taste for it, because they kind of liked what they heard in church and whatnot, and so I found if I'm gonna start making music, the people who are gonna like it are usually not Christian. That's not why it's not Christian, because some of the songs, like Snowflakes, is very Christian based. And so I just write. There's no like distinct, I'm not gonna write about Christian themes, or I am gonna write about Christian or any religious themes on this album. It's just what I felt like writing the songs about.
I see. And how did music begin for you as an individual? How did that start?
Actually, it started really late. Most musicians start pretty early, and they're very intrigued by music. And for me, it was midway through high school. I was always a very jock personality, and I was very much into basketball and football. And I just heard one winter during the basketball, and that pushed me into, I wanted something to do while I was hurt, and playing music was kind of easy to do when you're hurt. You can't move too much, and so you just end up playing piano, and I played piano and bass. And so I started picking that up, and then I just found out that that's what, not only was I more talented at, but what I had more of a passion at.
And the moniker of the band, White Apple Tree, where, you know, to talk about the name.
The name actually, it's kind of a silly name. It really has no actual meaning other than the fact that I was really, really into going hiking at the time, and I was really into trees and whatnot, and I was just thinking of something that was cool imagery. It absolutely has no, like, hidden meaning or anything. It's just a cool-sounding name that when I was first making the music, I was really into trees, and so it's kind of become something that the four of us in the band have become really attached to, though, and we really like it, and it's not necessarily a normal band name, and so we really like it. We get a lot of questions about it, and we just feel horrible that we don't have some profound answer for everybody.
And talk about the genesis of this band. How did it get going? How did it start?
Well, it actually started because of MySpace, which is kind of comical because MySpace is pretty much deceased now in terms of popularity. But it was we started right before MySpace Music's heyday. And I just posted a couple songs in there. I posted Snowflakes and a song called Zombies Can't Dance on there after I'd recorded them, and they just started taking off. That's how I came to know my manager, Stephen McClintock. He actually found us through MySpace, and everyone found us contacted us via MySpace, just because now we have over 2 million-something plays, just because right when MySpace was popular, we were right in that group of
select group of bands that really hit it off on MySpace, and so White Apple Tree coming together is due to MySpace, and then it was originally just a solo project by me for about a year and a half, and then I started, then my brother started playing with me in bass and drums as well into the live show, so now we've got a full four-piece band, and we're loving it. I mean, we all get along well, we're all best friends before that, so it's fun.
Talk about your other bandmates and tell me what you think each of them brings to the table, not just musically, but personality-wise, that makes it work, you know?
We have a very charismatic band, which is really nice. My brother is actually probably the quietest in the band, but he brings kind of a coolness, because the other of us are not nerdy, but we're not necessarily cool, per se, and my brother is more cool, and he's more calm, and he's more collected and with himself, and we tend to say whatever we want to say, and sometimes it doesn't come out right, but it's always, we're always fun, and we like to be energetic and fun with each other. Stefan is the drummer. He plays drums, Stefan Makarowicz. And I really love him because he's just so fantastic live. He brings such an energy live more than the rest of us, but he really knows how to make a crowd dance, for one. He's a very good drummer. He knows when to play and when not to play, which is really nice when you have a drummer, because not all drummers have great restraint, so it's really great to find one that does. And Alex is our networker. He's wonderful at networking, getting out there and making sure he knows everybody at all times, and he's the one at shows that's making sure that he has everyone's phone numbers and he knows what's going on next time.
And talk about how you go about songwriting. How does that happen?
Songwriting, it usually, I think all but three songs in the album were completely written by me, I don't really have a specific way to write songs, even though I usually have a specific way to record them. I direct process for writing them. It usually starts from a vocal melody that I like, and I try to build some chords, a nice, some harmonies, and then the rest of the song falls into place once I have the vocals down and the melodies and harmonies that I want. I work on the rest of the songs. And three songs, actually, now we've been writing more with our newer stuff, with our newer songs. My brother's been writing the basis for the song. He's actually been writing pretty much the song, and then I've been adding vocals and melodies on top of it, which has been really great. Breakhead, Bombs, and Sleep were actually written that way on the album.
Visit White Apple Tree at their official website, www.whiteappletree.com. From their CD Velvet Mustache, here is the band once again with Snowflakes.
Feeling like I know the words of a song I haven't wrote. A song of love, a song of hope. A song that guides me down this road. Feeling like I know the words.
on the album, what songs resonate for you the most personally, and why?
Why? I don't know, but I guess I can find a reason. But my favorite, I have three favorite songs in the album, and they are "Broken Bones," "Rakehead," and "Sleep." "Sleep" is an instrumental song, and so there's no lyrics that I really pull from. But I love just the ambient, beautiful synths that we have in there, and that was one that my brother mainly constructed. And so whenever something that I don't work on primarily, I tend to gravitate towards that a lot, because I haven't heard it quite as much as I've heard the other ones. And so I just love the atmosphere of that song, and it's really beautiful. "Broken Bones" and "Rakehead" are probably my favorite melodies on the album, and lyrically they're both fairly dark, not depressing, but they're not uplifting lyrics for the most part, and I kind of gravitated towards that a little bit more when I was writing most of the album, and the synths tend to mirror the lyrics with more of a dark imagery, and I've been into that recently. I've been into a lot of Depeche Mode, New Order, not necessarily the happiest music, so.
Yeah, exactly. Sonically, what do you think is different with this band's sound as opposed to your days as a Christian artist? I mean,
Pretty much everything. With a worship artist, you pretty much are limited to a five-piece band, maybe a couple horns if you're goofy and wacky. But for most worship artists, it's a singer with an acoustic guitar, a lead guitarist, bass, possibly a piano, stereotypical church. But we use guitar and we use bass, but we don't have we didn't record any live drums for it. It was all programmed drums, which is pretty much unheard of in the Christian, at least in the worship field. And we really just tried to sculpt our songs not around three or four chords, but just around melodies for the most part, and let the chords work into themselves, and just trying out different chord progressions with the same melody, and just seeing what different harmonies that creates, and what different frequencies our ears really gravitate towards. And so I don't hear as much of that in the worship music scene. Not saying it's not there, obviously. I don't know every worship artist, but the worship that I was more accustomed to was a lot different than that.
And for the artwork on the CD, none of you show your faces.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
It was just kind of a spur of the moment thing. It wasn't really a planned out, let's not show our faces on this. We just found we liked the pictures, and then just I was playing around with, because we have a good friend, Kevin Longwell, who takes our pictures, and he's just a great photographer. And I was just playing around with one of the pictures, and I cut out one of our faces one time, and my brother was like, "That looks great. It'd be kind of cool if we kind of had this, like, anemone to ourselves that we didn't, not who are we, but just kind of, like, almost a suspicion." And we also didn't put the lyrics on the hard CD itself, so we're kind of trying to direct people to go look us up online at whiteappletree.com or myspace.com or anything like, or even Facebook now, I guess, because we started on the internet, so we're trying to push people back towards the internet. And so if people don't see our faces on the album cover, they might want to go see it on the internet or something. And that's kind of the way music and kind of life is moving, is to online stuff, because it's so gratifying and instantly.
And what would you like a person to come away with after they've heard this album?
I don't have any specific thing that I hope that one person comes away with, just because it's so diverse, and there's so many different songs, and there's so many different styles of songs, I should say. And people tend to gravitate towards different songs. I've heard literally all 12 different songs be someone's favorite on the album, simply because they don't really sound similar to each other. And so I really don't have one specific thing that I hope someone comes away with, other than maybe wanting to hear more of our music. So that's pretty much it. I mean, we don't have a certain message that we're trying to send. It's not a religious experience.
And what do you think is next for you musically?
Musically, we're keeping writing songs. We're all in White Apple Tree, and we're all in other projects as well. And we all make a lot of different music, and so we're always busy writing, because we just love writing music and contributing out there. So people can hear different forms of art, and different forms of art can be respected. And we respect most art that we can. And so our goal is just to keep writing music, and tour, and everything that comes along with that, and just keep seeing how it comes in the music industry, because we're doing, I mean, I'm still pretty green to the industry, because I've only been in it for a couple of years now, but we're having fun, we're selling some records, which is great, and we're looking to move forward, so it's great.
Visit White Apple Tree at their official website, www.whiteappletree.com. From their CD Velvet Mustache, here is the band once again with Youth. That's going to do it for another edition of Rockwired Radio. A special thanks goes out to Amanda Kagan Public Relations, Stephen McClintock of 37 Records, Chip Schutzman and Clint Kaminska of Miles High Productions, and Jason Miller. Thank you all for making today's show possible. For Rockwired Radio and Rockwired.com, I'm Brian Lush, and remember, keep your eyes forward, never look back, and make it up as you go. Wonder what I must have done. Wonder where this is all coming from. Just be so then I'll know. Just be in the Rockwired Radio is a production of Rockwired Media LLC, a limited liability company, and is available exclusively at rockwired.com.